What is going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode, Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me, if you're not, at Kojak Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And then if you want to support the show, I got a Patreon and a Venmo. And, you know, I got a few subs. Thank you so much to the people that are subscribed and donating money. You guys are so kind. It's like just, but if you can leave a review, though, that means just as much. And if you could have somebody more in need, give them your money. I do this because I have fun. So, you know, it's nice to get some extra cash to pay for the books, but that's not really why I do this, right? I do it because I love history and I love learning. So, yeah, I am Jack Allen with Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. And I don't know why. I just felt like leading off because we're like getting some new listeners and stuff like that. I kind of changed the direction of the show. The show for a long time was, you know, conspiracy. So I'm if you go back to my first episodes, it's like aliens and funny stuff like and conspiracy stuff. And I kind of switched it to more history related podcasts. So if it's I'm sorry if it's not as exciting as the reptiles over, you know, in the moon and things like that. But I just kind of left that behind and switched the trajectory of the podcast. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. Dave, what's up, buddy? You're the first one here. I was worried it wasn't live. So thank you for coming, dude. Hopefully work's going well and life's going well. And I'm trying to think of anything else that I wanted to talk about, but I think that's really it. It's your pod, man. That's right, Dave. That's right, dude. But so my dog, guys, he's doing great in puppy school. We got him healing. We got him doing everything like that. He's doing a great job. His one trainer, I gave him a tip today. You know, because he cares about him so much. He's such a good boy with him. So we're learning, we're getting there. You know, he's getting a little less exhausting each day, even though, you know, when my wife got the dog, I was like, it's your dog. I got the cats. I do their litter. I feed them. The dog's your responsibility. And who's getting up at 5:30 a.m.? You know who's getting up at 5:30 a.m. But I love her and I love the dog. So it's all right. It was just my wife's birthday. So, Dave's got finishing up the new coop this weekend and are getting the new birds. Damn, dude. Perfect timing, right? I wonder if price went up for the chickens. Have you noticed? I guess they probably haven't gone up too much, but just I figured like eggs. I wonder if they went up. Let me just make sure Twitter, I'm on there. And then we'll get started. And then we'll get started. Thank you, Dave. All right. Yep, we're good. Perfect. So we'll get started here. So this is going to be the and this, so of eggs. Interesting. I make sense. I went up. And Dave, I thought of you in this podcast when we're going to get into it at the end, kind of where they talk about when the British government started looking into addiction of opium. So we're going to get, well, we'll bring that up because I remember we were talking in the chat. But anyway, so last episode we talked about from the book called Opium Inc. It's a great book. I highly recommend it. I'm almost done with it. This might be the last episode of it, and I'm going to switch to another like opium book, more conspiracy related, like Skull and Bones type of stuff. So this will probably be our last one, but this one's heavily focused on the opium wars. And so last episode though, we just talked how it started, how India, they started growing in India, selling it to China. It was a way to recoup money because England was having a silver shortage because they're buying all this stuff from the East. Talked about smuggling and how it was a part of the British government. It was a revenue source for them, even though they weren't involved with it. And we're going to get into that this episode, what the government had to do, because they turned a blind eye to it because they were getting all this tax money, bribery. People were paying, you know, lobbying. And we're going to get into that. It's really good. So go listen to the first one if you haven't. Not that you need that for this. I'm just trying to look to see any big fun things that I forgot. They overthrew the Mughal Empire essentially in India, which had like 300 years. And that was the one sad thing too, was after the Mughal Empire fell the second time, because I think the Muslims came, they took it over, and then they installed another Mughal king. They had this, like, it was like one of the wonders of the ancient world or whatever you want to call it, this gold throne that the Mughal emperor sat on. I mean, and I think the one diamond that the Queen of England wears is from that throne. And it was so greedy. It was a solid throne, solid gold throne. Instead of bringing it all back to England and for people to look at in amazement, they chopped it up, you know? And that reminded me of the the episode I did a long time ago on the gold in Japan after World War II, and how there was like a 12-foot solid gold Buddha. It was so heavy, they just chopped it into pieces. And not that you can compare a sculpture of Buddha to the throne, but it reminded me of that. Big news. Tell me the big news, dude. I want to hear the big news. All right. And while we wait for Dave to tell us his big news, I'm going to get on the start. So we're around the 1800s for anybody that doesn't know time frames, and that's hard to, you know, so 1776, you know, we're right around then. People got powdered wigs. They're hanging out. But 1805, there's this guy, Jamis J.G. Boy. I'm going to butcher that every time I say his name. So maybe we'll just call him JJ. But again, it's Jam Set to G. J.G. Bahoy. So that's his name. So anyway, he was on his fourth voyage to China. He was an Indian, obviously. And now that all of his journeys were uneventful, I mean, they were like 6-month trips, but this one would change everything for history as well, not just him. And it was in the middle of the Napoleonic Wars. That's also what's fascinating, is this opium trade is booming during the opium wars. J.G. Wentworth. I said JJ, but what's your big news, dude? You got to tell me your big news while I'm reading this, so I can read it to everybody so they can see the big news. All right. My dog's just looking out the window. But anyway, so he was on this fourth trip. The Indian Ocean is prowling with French vessels because of the Napoleonic Wars. And a French warship with 74 guns, which must be look crazy, came across GGB's ship, and they lowered the British flag, totally outgunned. The French made the trading vessel into a warship, and it wasn't going to China anymore, right? It was now going to South Africa. And on the ship, his newish homeboy, this guy William Jardine, who was a Scottish surgeon's assistant, Jardine would end up owning and operating one of the most important British trading houses in the 19th century, called Jardine and Matheson. And for three decades, though, they would dominate the opium trade. They were the smuggliest of smugglers. And by 1834, one third of total opium was coming from them, and their share just kept rising. They became a driving force for the British in expansion in China. And how did they do that, might you ask? Dave's big news. I'm taking over the father's business. Was given that option over Christmas, decided to accept the offer. Well, congrats, dude. Sounds like that makes you happy. So awesome. Good for you, dude. But so these guys, they build this empire of opium trading. And opium, though, even though we talked about this last episode, people knew what it was doing to China, kind of, but not really, right? There's no internet. Well, they made sure that what they kept out. So they funded newspapers that lionized smuggling. And so they would print newspapers like, it's not smuggling, it's free trade. God wants us to share the wealth of our nations with the world, And they pushed for a war with China and opium. Now, again, this just reminds me of every military defense contract company, whatever. I'm trying to think of one, Halliburton, whatever. They donate money to the news sources. So you talk about in the news, can you believe it? Iran is misogynistic. They don't like homosexuals. We need to go to war for that. They're mean. They're mean to our people. They're mean, you know, and this is exactly what was done in the opium trade. It was the exact same thing, dude. And they pick a country. They got resources. They're making money on it. It's not going the way they want. Uh-oh. Wait, everybody. Look what we just found over here. They are not letting the Iranian people read books about homosexuality. It's time to bomb the shit out of them. That's it. That's the only option we have left. Do you guys want to live in a world where there's a place that doesn't accept the way you are? No, let's send Americans over there to die. And that's what Jardine and Matheson's company would do. And not, they weren't the only one, but. And these two celebrated after the first war of opium was not made legal. Why would they celebrate when opium, to keep them in the illegal trade? It meant more power for them. Why do you think drugs aren't legalized in America? There's so many reasons why. It has nothing to do with caring, morality, anything. It has zero to do with morality. We have no morals in America. It's total free for you. Just do whatever. You can go bang in the street. And if you know, if it's same-sex couple, you get probably get charged for a hate crime if you said, I wouldn't like my child to see that in the street. But so it's just funny that, again, like these smuggler, like the drugs today, if, I mean, you guys don't think, but regular people are probably like, oh, the cartels, they're bringing it all in. China, they're making the fentanyl. That's why this is happening. Yeah, they are doing those things. But the reason why we could stop it. What do you mean? You don't think the United States government, if they wanted to shut out drugs from coming into the country, you don't think they could do that? With all the technology they have today, they could blow up your cell phone with you holding it in your hand. They could stop it, dude. They don't do it because they're making so much money on prisons, on the cartels that the CIA uses to fund whatever fights they want to have. It's a great weapon against countries that, if maybe you're trying to weaken the populace, maybe you're trying to crime, blah, blah, blah. You guys get it. I don't need to explain this. But these two, they also pioneered the opium clipper, which was a fast ship made precisely for what the name of it says, for shipping opium everywhere. Sorry, I'm just pulling on my dog again. Oh, good. He's just sitting like a good boy. Good boy. Previously, the monsoon season, they prevented ships from making this trip or made it very difficult, and their ship broke the speed record of time. I'm branching off here, but it's just funny, like drugs, no one knows, like, and in the public, how much drugs have created our current world. Inventions, just like the cartel comes up with new crafty ideas. If there's a will, there's a way, right? And so a whole new type of ship was created for the sole purpose of shipping opium. And I just found that fascinating. It's almost like, you know, the Wright brothers making the airplane because they wanted to airdrop cocaine over the border. And their new ship, the Opium Clipper, it broke the speed records of the time. But Matheson would become so rich, he bought his own island, the Isle of Lewis, off the coast of England, and an island, like an Epstein Island, right? And he was the second largest landowner in Britain. $500,000. He built a literal castle off the coast of England. And Matheson's Holdings Limited is still around to this day and is still one of the most valuable publicly traded companies in the world. Do you hear reparations that they should pay back for all the Chinese they did? Maybe we should start that, right? I think they owe the world some money. And this is why I'm switching to the other book, because this is in the other book. But opium, it created wealth for Americans too. Skull and Bones was created by the Russells and the Roosevelts, opium dealers in America. Harvard in the 1800s was saturated with the black smoke. That's opium. The students, the whole campus was smoking opium. Princeton, same thing. The guy who helped one of the funders of Princeton, he sustained their wealth through many of the Boston's elite got their wealth through the opium trade. And maybe Princeton's not in there. I may have just added that, but Harvard was saturated with opium, and hence why Skull and Bones at Yale University was funded, because it was all this drug money was in Boston. Just crazy, right? Like, just crazy. It's just so hard for me. It's like these people are literal. It's like the Sackler family, right? Except they didn't even get in any trouble. The Sackler family had to claim bankruptcy for Purdue Pharma, but they didn't see any punishment, just like the opium dealing families of then. And just like the people that fund these cartels, make money off the cartels today. Like, do you really think, what's his name? Not Hugo Chavez, the guy that escaped out of prison on a motorcycle. What's his name? Anyone in the chat know what? I want to say El Chapo. Yeah, El Chapo is his name. Do you think El Chapo's the mastermind behind all of this? No, I would be shocked. I would be shocked if he is the mastermind. No, he's just not. You know he's not. I know he's not. You know he's not. But anyway, so back to JJ Jahibi. Though he was getting rich too, his dreams did not consist of just riches. He wanted to be the first baronet of Bombay, and he was going to use drug smuggling to do it. Wow. Imagine that, using drugs to fund your political power rise. Wow. Shocking, huh? I've never heard of that before. Totally, totally crazy. So in 1807, the royal family of Portugal, they had to flee from Napoleon, my boy, and they went to Brazil and became independent. And one of their guys, high up guys, was this guy, Faria. and he was broke because they just had to run away from Portugal, but he was pensioned by JJ Jahibi. And so now in Bombay, the opium merchants, they all kind of respected Chicago. It was like a, you know, like, oh, we're smugglers, we're pirates, we're the pirate descendants of pirates. Oh man, we don't want to get off topic and get onto pirates. But that wasn't the respect that these guys, these merchants shared, these smugglers shared, was not worldwide, right? Many people thought it was a bad trade, it was disgust, it was immoral. And he also took a play from the Rockefeller and Carnegie move, or I guess maybe they took it from him. Let's see, 1800s, right around the same time. But he realized if I use philanthropy with my riches, I'll be able to get bonds with England and Bombay's rulers. And so he donated over £300,000, like $30 million today. He paid for a hospital. He paid for grass that was free for cows to graze on, because since the opium boom, land was taxed for cattle to eat from. You can make more money, you know, selling opium than you could feeding cattle. In his hospital he donated, he wanted separated by caste system. The British refused but compromised with a separate kitchen for the Brahmins. Caste system still present today in India, though it's present in Hinduism. Not as obviously strong, but Brahmin, that's like a higher up, a priest. And I know this, Hindus are vegetarians. And, you know, not to trash Hindu culture, religion, obviously I am a Christian, but I found that interesting that they're vegetarians, because it's a very, you know, it's a polytheistic religion, a lot of tongue out, a lot of satanic symbolism, or we would associate with satanic symbolism, a lot of sex, all these things that these, in my mind, these demonic forces want you to do. And it just made me interested that they're vegetarian. You know, so all the sex, the orgies, blah, 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 you know, and it sounds like it's a modern day, like, woke person. I just found that interesting, right? Like, oh, you can have sex. It's you guys are prudes or whatever. Eventually, though, he gets his baronet title, and he had a bunch of money placed in a trust, but this opened the floodgates, and Britain started giving their colonies the titles that they're on their colonies to non-British people. So he was like the first guy that kicked. So he broke a glass ceiling there. So good for JJ, killing it. So by the mid-1850s, though, Bombay was on its way to take over Calcutta as the economic powerhouse for Britain. But they all always fell a little short. But Bombay had this burgeoning cotton industry blowing up. Now, where else was there cotton around and what was going on around this time? Right, the Civil War. So this increased profits exponentially for the Bombay cotton industry. And I was just thinking of this, you know, I wouldn't rule it out. I don't know. I have no proof of this, but we know Britain was involved in the Civil War, whether instigating, whether poking, the Bank of England more specifically. So is it totally out of the picture that the Civil War, that which they had tons of stock in the Bombay cotton industry, is it totally out of the picture that maybe this was another reason why they instigated the fight, helped manipulate the fight? Because the more I learn, the more I believe MI6, Britain, they eventually got a hold of America. Maybe it was all part of the plan to kind of have America be the different arm of the same body, the same machine. But so, yeah, you get the point I'm making. One family that would replace the Parsis in the opium trade was this family called the Sassoon family. And they were one of the most eminent Jewish families in Baghdad. I had no idea that there was Jewish families in Baghdad, by the way. But maybe at this time it was a little different, I guess. So David, though, the patriarch, he was in Bombay in 1832. He was the treasurer to the governor of Baghdad, just like his father before him. Good. Opium dealer and treasurer to a government. That should work out well. I bet no corruption happens there. It's all honest smuggling, dealing, and using your money for a country. And so he makes a name for himself with the Brits due to his connections across the Arabian Sea. First, he was a cotton guy, then switching to opium, as many were trying to distance from opium. He didn't. He said, I'll go balls in, right? Whatever. Screw that. And in turn, passed the money downstream. Basically, the Sassoon family... I've skipped a part. And he sent his son to Canton, China to be an agent. Then they set up branches for the Sassoon family and their opium dealing in Hong Kong and Shanghai. And the way he got his start is he would loan money to the Malwa traders and in turn pass that money downstream, because basically Sassoon was advancing money to farmers themselves, something that no one in India had done before, probably because of this caste system. The farmers, they couldn't get a loan, but Sassoon was more than willing to give a loan. And before long, he was able to eliminate all of his competitors. He was dominant. The Sassoon family was dominant. They were the Sackler family. Just if that helps you get it, you know, clear in your head. And his firm acted as the banker to finance the Malwa opium. Basically, he was giving money before the crop was purchased. Now, they did give loans back then, but he was the first guy to do it on a large scale, probably relatively, quote unquote, fair compared to the, I forget the names of the people that loaned the money to the farmers and the tax collect, how they were just so corrupt. And not that the Sassoon family wasn't so corrupt, but I bet it was more organized, uniformed. Then, just like what happens when you have a pretty large stock in a monopoly, I started manipulating prices by stockpiling and artificially limiting supply of opium. It was the Sassoon family who pushed Jardine and Matheson outside the opium trade. That's how powerful this family was. And, you know, it's just the manipulation of supply and artificial, whatever, like diamonds, like gas. I mean, we've talked about this in my gas episode. You know, you would think like when we had the oil crisis with Jimmy Carter, we were out of oil. That's why it was so expensive. That's why there were gas lines. No, we had more oil than we ever did in the world at that point. It wasn't because the American couldn't get the oil. It was because the oil companies bumped up the price. They were playing on what was going on in the world. I just saw Shell oil or whatever, Shell oil. Yeah. They hit record profits, something like $23 billion either in 2022 or last quarter. But gas is super expensive. How are they making more money than they ever did? Because they're just charging more, you know, and I'm not a communist that says that this should be regulated, but I wouldn't say that's fair. Is that really free market or is that a monopoly that you have the power to manipulate prices like that? His cotton mills, Sassoon's, employed over 15,000 Indians, and his son, Abdullah, which is a funny name. You wouldn't think, a Jewish guy would name his son Abdullah. I would think that's like a Muslim name. But anyway, he took the name Albert. I would too. If my name was Abdullah and I'm dealing with the British and the Americans and Europeans, I'd say, call me Albert. You know, that's like my name being GG Hebe, right? No one can say that. So I'd say, just call me Jack, right? All right. So Albert, he moved to England in 1870. He's running the Sassoon family business there. He would eventually marry a Rothschild. Ironic, because they were known as the Rothschilds of the East. That's how powerful this Sassoon family was, dude. And it's just, I don't know. It's crazy just how these power families, these people that control it, they marry each other. They keep this wealth within this little circle at the top, just like the Rockefellers have done, just like the Morgans have done, just like every billionaire rich family has done. It's just, I understand like you're that's your social circle, that's your class, but it's just crazy, right? And continuing with this, because of their presence in Shanghai, there was an influx of Jewish merchants that came to China. And one of Arthur's sons, one of Arthur's sons would become the founding member of the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank, which would become the HSBC. So HSBC, everybody, is an opium bank. That was how it started. And if you don't know HSBC, it's a huge European bank. It's like Wells Fargo for Britain or whatever you want to call it. But it was created because of the opium trade. Right? I mean, that's insane, dude. A financial institution that is a paragon of power in 2023 was started from the opium trade. The same way the Roosevelts and the Russells, a family that had two presidents, so many powerful people, built on opium, built on drugs. How many pharmaceutical companies have built their empires on drugs? Granted, they might be legal drugs. Boehringer Ingelheim, billion-dollar company. It's a private pharmaceutical company. All the, we already went over Purdue and the Sackler family. I don't know, how Pfizer, I don't know if there's any families that really dominate those, but still. So basically, though, another one of the sons, they became a bank a chairman in the Bank of India. Most of the family were secularly Jewish, allegedly. And essentially, India became a narco state. Opium was propping up both Britain and the Indian economy. As a national movement in India grew, they remained totally silent on opium. You know, controlled opposition, right? Like, we deserve freedom from Britain. They're colonizing us. They're beating us up. And then people say, yeah, let's break away. The thing that's allowing them to be enslaved and just pillaged opium. Should we get rid of it? Oh, no. Don't mention opium, because they're getting paid. The people creating the nationalist movement, again, are probably controlled opposition. The same way the Daily Wire is controlled why the Daily Wire will never be kicked off YouTube, while PragerU will never be kicked off of YouTube. It's not because, they straggle the line, they know it. No, it's because if those things didn't exist, people would go out elsewhere for places to listen, to learn, to find a group of people that think the same, act the same. But those two, they keep the boomers and the con ink right where they want them to be. Oh, we can criticize transgenderism, we can criticize drag shows, but it'll never go a step further where maybe we'll say, usury is actually the cause of all of our issues. Whatever, white supremacist thought line that they say, the PragerU, Daily Wire, they'll never cross that. They keep everybody right where it's okay, where you're basically just the opposite of a woke liberal, So it's just, I'm sure that and the British, they kind of created all of our CIA's moves. So I would not be shocked that the Indian nationalist movement was not organic. So anyway, in 1838, China's emperor makes a decision. His son was smoking opium in the Forbidden City's temple. There's just so much opium coming into China. It's terrorizing China. I mean, the emperor's son was an opium addict. 37 kilograms of opium, an adult male Indian elephant, was seized from smugglers. And they send in this honorable, what's up, bad Goyant? What's going on? Funny name. The New Atlantis. Pressy, I haven't seen you in a while, dude. Thanks for coming. They're getting wreaked on them from the opium. They're just dumping it in there. You can think of it like, go to Kensington. Oh, you guys don't know what Kensington is. Go to Philadelphia or New York City and go to, or LA. Everyone knows San Francisco's, all the bums in the street. Sorry, houseless people in the street, pooping in the street and everything. That was China, guys. Have you ever seen the video? See, I know some of you know opium or heroin and stuff, but you see people, they're like standing, but they don't fall over. They're just like this, nodding out. That's the phrase. That's what China was filled with. It was like a San Francisco in the 1800s. I mean, it was probably a really horrible sight to see. So anyway, China says they send this guy, Lin Zhu. And Lin Zhu, his family has been government workers. He was seen as incorruptible, ruthless to opium addicts. He would say, give it up or death. And his real dream, though, as all good people are, is irrigation and grain transport. That's the pinnacle of Lin's dreams and goals. But he says, all right, I'll use the opium to show the emperor I could be the best damn irrigation and grain transport government worker that China has ever seen. But almost a foreshadowing of the future China, he weaponized public surveillance. So Lin would eventually arrest over 1,600 people, confiscate 14 tons of opium, and was imprisoned five times more opium felons than in 3 years of the guy that ran it before. Robert, what's up, dude? How are you doing, man? Thanks for coming, buddy. And things went okay with Lin in China until he arrested a British citizen. Well, let's just continue. I'm going to keep getting sidetracked, but you just see these parallels and connections to today, right? And wait till just see what this causes. Just see. Okay. So Lin, he's 14 tons of opium, but he arrests a British citizen. And the British papers, do you think they said opium smuggler arrested? No, they did not. They said it is every man's God-given right to have free trade. These rules are unjust. These darn non-Christians. What, don't they know that these are God-given rights to trade drugs? And oh, I just lost. Okay. Lynn then blockaded the ports so no one could enter or leave unless they gave up their stock of opium. And the lines of credit for these opium chests reach all the way to London. Lots of different people's fortunes are in these opium chests that are sitting in China's dock. Millions, I mean, 14 tons, millions and millions of dollars. And do you think it's your and my money, regular folk? No, these are powerful people whose money is tied up in those chests that are sitting in the ocean and they can't move. So Britain's guy, this guy, Elliot, that's his last name. He came up with a plan. He said, listen, Lynn, I'm going to hand you over more than 20,000 opium chests. And he promised the British government to the merchant and said, guys, we're going to hand over all our opium chests, but don't worry. The British government is going to reimburse us. And that's around 2 million pounds. Today's money, like $200 million, the British government. Imagine. I'm making up a story. Pfizer uses the opium produced in Mexico or in China, whatever. And they, you know, a foreign government says, we're locking it down. You can't get it. You can't make oxycodone. And obviously that was Purdue. With the papers, if they arrested a Pfizer exec or whoever, you know for damn well the paper would say the same thing these British papers said. They would ignore the fact that they're dealing death and just say, oh, it's free trade. Look how authoritarian, tyrannical these countries are. Aren't you lucky you live in a free, God-given country? So again, America, that's like America promising to pay the cartels money that they stole or that Canada took from them. So some historians argue that Elliot did this on purpose, that he knew that England could not pay the criminals money for opium because they're criminals. It's illegal. You can't have a foreign government paying for smugglers' lost goods. But he knew, it's possible he knew that this would cause Britain to go to war with China. Regardless, Lynn burned the 20,000 opium chests. Could you imagine that, guys? I mean, these are like, think of a treasure chest, you know, like a big old chest packed to the brim with opium. As a former heroin addict, that sounds crazy. All right. You can just drop when, if I'm about to die, find those 20,000 chests and just leave me there. I'll be fine. I'll go out happier than ever. Lightly joking. If you're an addict, you understand the humor. Hopefully. But anyway, okay. So he said, regardless, so Lynn burned the 20,000 chests. It took 3 days to burn all the opium. I'm sure many guys were like trying to sneak in, like, you know, wafting to themselves. And the warmongers in Britain, who probably had lots of cash in the opium game, was putting up how this jailing British merchants required Britain to fight back. Required. God-given right, everybody. And then to make matters worse, some British smugglers, who were stuck in Lynn's blockade, they got a hold of some local liquor or whatever, and they got drunk. They destroyed a Buddhist temple, and then they killed a Chinese man. So Elliot tries to hush this up, right? He's working a deal. He's trying to get everyone to get along so they can get this opium trade going again. He tries to pay off the Chinese man's family that was killed. But Lynn found out and he said, you give me the soldiers that did this. I'm sorry, it was British soldiers, not smugglers. And he said, give me the soldiers that did this and I'm going to execute them. And Elliot, instead, before Lynn could, you know, really talk to him, he had a trial on his ship and he found not guilty. No way. Shocking, right? Not guilty? Oh my God. There just wasn't enough evidence that these drunk sailors killed this person. You know, not enough eyewitnesses, I guess. Maybe the DNA didn't match. And so he said they're not guilty, lack of evidence, and sent them back to Britain. Lynn was flipping out, right? He banned all trade with the British, even essential supplies like food and water, blocked, nothing. And blocking the docks, running out of water, Elliot said to Lynn, like, come on, man, let us get some supplies, dude. And he said no. And British said, we'll be back. So Elliot makes a few calls, writes a few letters, and British ships' cannons start ripping through these weak Chinese junkers that, you know, they're just pathetic compared to the British Navy. just pathetic. And there are still the millions of burned opium to deal with. Tensions are rising, obviously. And Britain's warmongers, they're ready to go to war. So war was way different back in those days. And I forget this too. And I'm sure you forget this as well. You know, you couldn't just pick up a phone and say, let's drop it. Let's go. Let's roll. Isn't that what they say for 9/11? The guys on the plane said, let's roll. And then, you know, you're like, yeah, America. Hell yeah. But anyway, so it took three years. I mean, if you guys listen to my last show, just to show you how slow information traveled, the British, when the Queen of Portugal, or the Princess of Portugal, married the King of England, they, as a wedding present, they got Bombay. It took 3 years to get Bombay. And in the book, it makes it seem like Bombay is an island. And then I think Raven in the chat, Bombay, India, is it an island? And I said it was an island last episode. And I think it was Raven. She said, no, it wasn't an island. Is Mumbai considered an island? Okay, so it's on a narrow peninsula of the southwest. So it's, okay, so it's not an island, but it's like Florida. That's it for you guys to help you visualize. It's like how it's a peninsula that goes out. It's pretty thin. It goes out pretty far. So anyway, okay. So it takes long. So it needs time to prepare for war. So Britain, though, they're getting ready. Like, you couldn't just declare war and go right the next day. So Britain, they sent 3,600 soldiers, not a lot, mostly Indians, a year after Lin had blockaded the British. So 22 ships arrive, and the Chinese thought it was just more opium smugglers trying to avoid the new rules that Lin set up. And so this is how China's economy was built. It was built on briberies because it was so poor. You know, if you were in the opium trade, you just took bribes. So you went in, you joined the Chinese Navy to get bribes. You joined the police force of whatever time for the bribes, because they were so broke, they weren't being paid enough to eat. So you can see what, so they saw these ships, they go, payday, baby, payday. Let's get it. Let's go. Smack, show me some cash. Sadly, though, they did not get the bribe. The admiral of the Chinese Navy, he was so confused that he couldn't run, because if you ran in China, you would be murdered anyway. So they have to stay and fight. They were heavily outmanned, heavily outgunned. I mean, these are like junker floating ships versus the British Imperial Navy, essentially. And the battle lasted a total of 9 minutes. And everyone that survived in town fled, soldiers included now. Governor, he committed suicide of China, and Britain took control of the port. And the first opium war, that's how it began. So how did, again, just like every war we talk about, every single one, it's like a false flag event. So this war was started, the first opium war kicked off because a British sailor was arrested. And think of all the death and destruction that was brought for this reason. It was a lie. I mean, they maybe got arrested. He got away. They murdered somebody after this. And Britain would still, you know, at the time, write that China was the bad guy because they didn't want free trade. But the emperor of China, he was kind of like aloof. And I'm going to talk about him here. But he had no idea he was at war with Britain for months, even when it was clear. He like still didn't believe it was a war. He like thought, oh, it's just like border clashes like they always had. I wonder, like, you know, was he an idiot? Was he like stupid? I don't know. Or maybe he was just so, I think what happens is like the God Emperor type persona, you get so full of yourself, or it breaks your brain. You know, humans aren't meant to live like that. We're not meant to be God kings, really. You just can't. I mean, look at anytime you raise somebody on a pedestal like that, they're going to abuse that power. I don't think it's possible. If you were elevated to a God king, could you maintain your sanity? Could you not, you know, have promiscuous sex with every concubine you have and all this stuff? I don't know. I'd like to think that I could. And I'm sure you do too. But regardless, he was an idiot, this guy. Okay. And so the British, they put their demands on one of the wealthiest representatives of China, who was a total brown noser to the the British, you know, he'd always give them gifts and say, oh, you're so powerful. Oh, God. And so he got the British to turn their ships around, gaining valuable time for China to stock up defenses. Baby, you're at war. We got to pump up. Come on. You can't be playing games, not, you know, getting your ships just blown holes through them. Except what he did was the emperor didn't believe that the war, or he thought the war was over now. The British left. What do you mean there's a war going on? There's no war. They're gone. And so instead of preparing, they did nothing. And like the narrator's voice, the war was not over. And it would go on for another 2 years, ending in 1842. The Chinese emperor was constantly being lied to by his generals and representatives. If they lost the battle, they claimed they won. And you might feel bad, like, oh, why is everyone lying to the emperor? Come on, why would they lie to him like that? Well, the reason why they were lying to him is if you told the emperor that you lost a battle, he took that as you were saying China was weak, and then he'd murder you and your entire family. So not the best way to get people to tell you the truth when you murder them and their family for telling you the truth, but so sad how the story is unfolding. Asia had such great nations, tribes, and individuals. It's true, dude. It's just so sad. I just got in a fight or disagreement with someone on Twitter, like before the show. Cause like some woke weenie that's on the, 200,000 followers, Lakota man or something. He tweeted out like, if the Germans can learn about German students can learn about the Holocaust, then American students can learn about the genocide of the Native Americans. Yeah, absolutely. There was absolutely a genocide. There was absolutely death, destruction, turmoil. But what do you think happened before the Europeans came to the New World? Do you think that everyone was just singing around, singing Kumbaya? No, they were skinning people alive. They were cutting out beating hearts. They would the Mayans were sacrificing 250,000 people a year on average. They would have lines, guys, like a amusement, like getting on the now defunct Splash Mountain, of waiting in line to rip out their heart, their beating heart. So it's just, I hate that. Oh, the evil white man, they're so evil. What do you think the world was before Europe got there? It was the same exact thing. It was violence, death, and destruction. That's humans. People are dumb, stupid, loud. A person is smart and kind. You guys, if you catch this, I'm stealing a Men in Black line from Men in Black 1. I'm butchering it, but it's true. Like, you cannot just tell me like, oh, it's just one group doing this evil. No, humans are very violent, dude, especially back then. So anyway, I don't know how we got there, but by the time the emperor realized that he was still in war, the war was pretty much over. And the Qing dynasty, that's what the dynasty that was in power during the for the Opium Wars, it was not its former self. It was broke, weak. Most people joined, like I said, joined the Navy just for the bribes, not the salary. And as the British pushed more and more inland, Chinese peasants who were told, do not collaborate with the British, they're broke. They're peasants. So they would sell the British food and water and whatever for silver because they were poor. And Elliot, he's still trying to work out a deal with the Chinese, and he kept lowering his demands. So for my brief cursory, yes, thank you. But, I don't know why bad Goyen. I don't like, I was like I brought that up on Twitter and the comment was like, well, the Spanish were pretty brutal. I know, dude, I said that. Yes, they were brutal. They were horrible. So was the people before them. So were the Muslims to the Spaniards when they conquered the Iberian Peninsula or whatever. I mean, like, you got it. It's when I see people that can't get over that, they'll just keep dropping back to Europe. Clearly the propaganda has permeated your brain to a point that you can't see what the world really is. It's a dangerous place. And it doesn't just need to be from white people. It's all over in every civilization and culture. It's so frustrating. I want to shake people when they were evil. Dude, who's am I saying they were moral Christians? No, 1,000 of them slaughtered like 200,000 of them. They were horrible. Dude, they were horrible. They said, if you don't worship the Bible, they'll just cut your head off. So anyway, the King Dynasty was Elliot. And so I think he's kind of like, he's literally doing his best. I'm not saying he was a great guy, but he was trying his best because he felt bad for China. He lived like in China. He worked with China. And so Britain had all the cards, dude. They could unleash whatever fury they wanted to on China. And Elliot kept lowering the demands. Like, okay, you don't need to do this, guys. Just come on. You got to let this go though. And he just keeps lowering and lowering. He wanted good relations, basically. He wanted a trading partner. He wanted an ally. Well, he didn't know that Britain didn't care about having an ally or a friend in China. They had the power, and they wanted all the power. And it was, as all wars, and it was very sad. Chinese families would kill their families rather than taken prisoner by the British. Malaria, horrible deaths. And eventually trade went back to where it was. Lin was removed. Tea began to flow, even though the war was still continuing. So their trading's back open, war still going on. So if the British is really fighting for free trade, for the God-given right, well, if trade's opened up, why are you pushing more and more inland? You're not trading in. I mean, I guess you can trade there, but that's not where the original gripe was. And the Chinese, they were able to put up one fight. They had one battle that was a vicious battle that they pushed the British back a little bit. But because of informants and poor peasants, the British beat back the Chinese again. And the government of Canton had to pay £6 million to the British for them to leave. And again, 6 million is like $300 to $600 million today. So a lot of money with already a broke country. So they looted, they left the soldiers that they had been cheated out of looting Canton. So they took out their frustration on unarmed peasants. Sad, you know what that means. At one point, the peasants, they all grouped up and they rose up and turned against the British. Now this sounds like China's all right. Like if you were the emperor, yeah, let's fight them back. Except the emperor didn't do that because then the peasants hated him too. So now he's like, oh crap, they're starting building up armies of peasants to go against the British. It's only a matter of time before they focus on me, you know? So he wasn't too happy about that, but this was only this was just the beginning of their struggles. And one man was forcing Britain to fight with one arm tied behind their back, Charles Elliot. So we had to get rid of him, right? The powers that be, they don't want that. So when he returned to England, his reputation was in shambles. Papers either wrote him as an idiot, as inept, or cowardly. Regardless, though, a treaty is signed and a new guy takes his place, Henry Pottinger. And hit the brutality that we just heard about was only the first step. He was just beating up on the Chinese, no matter how many men they had. His translator was this Christian missionary that negotiated with China, and the king prohibited Christian missionaries from entering their land, but they also banned opium. So Christian missionaries were all over China. Yeah, you get it. And many missionaries would join the opium companies as employees and would enter China under that guise. You know, just like every good Catholic or whatever, Protestant priest, minister, you join the cartels and then you can preach Christianity to the Mexicans. You know, I don't know. I'm making bad jokes here, but you understand what I'm saying. But you can see the conflict here, right? This is like juxtapositioning. You have a Christian missionary, morality, love, children, God, working for a country that is selling death and destruction. You see this? There's an issue here. Okay. And people can somehow, they can justify this as the greater good. And I can see that. I mean, I'm not unfair to people. I understand you want to spread Christianity to these people. So this is the way you got to do it, you know? And some of the missionaries said the Chinese restrictions on trade went against the will of God, who wanted countries to share of the world, to share their wealth with each other. Just hilarious. There's not help with much folks. They can't even comprehend races and families and nature. True, dude. True facts. This guy Gutzlaff, he was the one translator. If you watch Game of Thrones, Gutzlaff, this guy, the Christian missionary that worked for the opium company, he was like the Varys, who's the eunuch guy. He has all the informants of the kids, the little birds, he calls them in Game of Thrones. And his famous phrase, Gutzlaff's, is knowledge is power. And so he paid all these poor peasant Chinese children to be his spies. I'm sure it didn't cost much, you know. And Pottinger, the guy that took over for Charles Elliot, it's just so similar today. He said, it's actually, It's actually the Chinese fault for all of their issues with opium. Why is it their fault? If they just legalized it, they could tax it. They could make money on it. So you see, people just dodge all moral responsibility and the moral implications. The same Pottinger is the same way as the Sackler family, the same way as all these Teva, these companies that make these drugs that they know cause harm, opiates, blah, 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 you know, single-handedly causing the opioid epidemic in America, ravaging me, my family, millions of families. They just ignore that. They say, well, if you just did this, it wouldn't be a problem. Or if you just did this, look at all the benefits of that. And you know, you get it. You guys get it. I don't need to explain. But anyway, so the treaty directed the Chinese to pay the British $21 million, so at least $200 million, guys. And they had reopened 5 ports for the English trade, essentially ending the opium monopoly they had in Canton. So good for Britain, bad for Cantonese people, because they're getting all that bribe money. And now they're not the only port that's accepting opium. So the British also gained Hong Kong forever. So that's how Britain got Hong Kong. It was the first opium war. They beat the hell out of China. And that's how Hong Kong, HSBC Bank, all this stuff started because of the opium wars. Isn't that fascinating, though? I just find that fascinating, like just mind-blowing. And you know what's also as funny is drugs in China have a long history. We talked about Paul Helliwell, who worked for the OSS. He was in China, stationed in China after World War II. And the KMT, the capitalist faction, America-sponsored, Chiang Kai-shek, that's how they funded their military, was selling opium in China. And then he brought that idea back to America. And that's why the CIA sells drugs. So it's just funny that, again, there's so much power from this drug money. And look what they get, Hong Kong. And that was the point I was making. Taiwan, the reason why it's a capitalist country is because Chiang Kai-shek, his forces lost to the People's Republic of China. They had to escape. They went to Taiwan. And that's why Taiwan's a capitalist, is because America funded them, probably said, like, we're going to take it back one day. And it's just crazy, right? Isn't that, history's so fat. Like, I love it, dude. I love it. That's why I say, if you have money and you want to donate, awesome. If you don't, give it to somebody else in need, because I love this stuff. I love it. I love it. Just blows my mind. Got to check on Sir Charles here. Okay. He's lying down. He's a good boy. He's tired. He was at school, puppy school all day from 8:30 to 5. So that's a long day. The British left once they got the original 6 million from Lin's burning the chest, and the first opium war was now over. Bad Joy, thanks for being here and commenting. You guys are so nice. I literally, my show would be so boring if it weren't for you. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you learned something, and I try to make it entertaining as possible. Okay. Even the name Opium War was named that as a critique to the British government by the anti-war opium people, except no government has ever been brought down by winning a war, right? Never. John Quincy Adams praised Britain, praised them for going to war on the principle of universal natural rights. He brought up how they ended the African slave trade after profiting from it for decades, if not centuries, but how Britain is the moral paragon of values and God-given rights. Oh, like, again, you know, right? Like, Britain's people made millions in the slave trade. Then they said, oh, slavery's bad. Let's get rid of it. Oh, yeah, it is bad. Let's get rid of it. Same thing with opium, except, oh, free trade, non-free trade, bad. You know, you get it. You get it. And things were only getting worse in China. In the 1840s and 50s, one of the largest rebellions in Chinese history was gaining steam. They followed a Chinese guy who said he was the brother of Jesus Christ. So I guess those Christian missionaries were doing a decent job. You know, they got Jesus' brother rolled up right here. And these revolts, it had the vultures circling. Britain, who was talking about allying with France, their historic enemy, you know, hello, the 100-year war, didn't end that much long. You know, it ended a few centuries before, but they still were battle after that. But they and even United States was one to get in on the vulture action. And even with all this open trade, British was $8 million in the red. So they're losing money. What did they try to do? They tried to change the treaty so they could trade more inland. But the emperor that they worked over, he died, and a 19-year-old emperor took his place. He refused. So we already know that this isn't going to be good for him. So Lord Palmerston, the guy that they brought in there, he became a PM of Britain for the following year. And our story is not over yet. So just like every goddamn war, you'd be hard to find the reason to what history says would actually happen and why the war was started. So we already talked about the first Opium War was because they arrested a British citizen who was selling death and destruction. So how did you get into the second Opium War? Well, let's get under this. It's going to be under the same exact dubious, pathetic reasons to send thousands to die. But let's find out. So this guy, Harry, 1856, there's a ship called the Arrow. Is it a British ship? No, it's a Chinese ship. Okay, it's a Chinese ship. It's raided. Okay, well, China can raid their own ships. I mean, what's that have to do with Britain? Well, Harry Parks, this guy who had been in China since he was 14, he was 28. He was the acting consul of Canton. And he began complaining of China's xenophobia and disrespect for the British. Kind of ironic, accusing China of xenophobia at the same time that you're about to invade their country. So it sounds like they probably have every right to be a little xenophobic. But isn't that amazing, guys? It's stuff doesn't change. It doesn't change. The same reason why we'll go to war in the Middle East because women have to wear burqas or whatever. They're misogynist. They're anti-feminism. And we need to liberate these people. All the proxy wars in South America, Guatemala, Ukraine, all over. These wars are not, they put them out as moral predicaments. Like, oh, these people are being brutalized. These people are being hurt. Putin or Assad, he's gassing his own people. Let's go to war with Syria. That's not what it is. That's not what that's a lie. That's not, they wouldn't go to war for that. So anyway, they're real xenophobic. And I don't think he really cared, Harry Parks cared that the peasants of China were xenophobic. And I find that hard to believe. The same way I don't think America really cares, or the powers that be, that Muslim countries are mean to women and they can't drive. I just don't see that, you know. All the evidence points the other way, that our government or our powers that be care about morality and people's well-beings. But Parks, he needed a reason for war. And the arrest of the Arrow crew was exactly that. I don't know where my dog went, but anyway, he needed a reason for war. And the arrest of the Arrow crew was exactly that. The Arrow was a Chinese ship through and through. And the British, okay, well, I'll give the British a little thing. They had a contract with the Arrow that it was under their protection. What does that mean? I don't know. They're under their protection. Well, that contract expired when the Arrow was raided. So do you think Parks or maybe Britain brought up this point? They said, well, to be honest, you know, the ship actually, our contract expired. No, they didn't ever bring that up. You know, they claimed the China, get this, just again, history effing rhymes. They claimed the Chinese ripped and tore a British flag that was on the ship. And they ripped and tore it apart. They spit on it. Okay, yeah, let's send thousands to death for that. Okay, yeah. I'm sure. And again, what does this sound like? Babies in incubators, or I don't know. All of our wars are these stupid bullshit reasons that we send thousands to die for. But so that's what the British, for the second Opium War, they raided a Chinese ship that was at one point kind of under British protection, and then they ripped and tore a British flag, but actually it came out there was never a British flag on the ship. So they lied to start another war. And I don't fully understand, regardless though, the British started bombarding the city's walls, with the US was even got involved in attacking China for this ultimate disrespect. But regardless, Britain started, I don't fully understand British politics, but Palmerston, the PM, this warmonger, but because of the troubles in India and China trying to kill Napoleon III, they got caught for doing that. His government kept getting votes of no confidence, but they would make it through. So I think we kind of saw that today. But like the British, they can, you know, if Boris Johnson was voted no confidence. Palmerston had this happen to him like three times, but he survived each one. During this, all of this, the war in China continued through the French, and they joined and just beat the hell out of the Cantonese ports. So in 1858, another treaty is signed, opening more ports, allowing Christian missionaries, effectively legalizing opium. Great. The war should be over, right? We got our opium. We got more ports. We got islands. We got cities. We got all the things we need. Do you think they ended the war? No, war is too profitable. It continued for two more years, culminating the invasion of the Forbidden City, Peking, now Beijing. The brutality was captured for the first time, one of the first times in history. The Second Opium War had an official photographer. And you should go look it up. His name was Felice Bido. I'll pull up a photo real quick. Felice Bido, Second Opium War. So this was the first war that was like, you know, shown on TV. So, or not TV. What the fuck am I talking? Oh, sorry. What the hell am I talking about? So you see just death and destruction, dead bodies. I mean, this was crazy at the time. You know, this was never seen except if you were a soldier. Here's a priest. What are these? Look at these. I mean, just crazy. You guys really should check out the photos. He's amazing. He got photos that we probably all look at today and are amazed. Wow, this one's amazing. Chinese lady, for Joe's listening, she's like washing her hair in a big bucket. Just wild. Wow. Felice Bido. So yeah, check out Felice Bido, B-E-A-T-O, if you want to see some awesome photos. So yeah, so this was the first war that we had a photographer for. So in 1860, Felice Bido went to China, capturing these never before seen type of photos, glorifying the British onslaught. And the second Opium War ended when the British invaded Beijing, Peking. The emperor fled. They put his brother in charge, and another treaty was brought out. This one even more bad for China. Russia got in on it. U.S. got in on the action, this treaty. So I bring this up because I can see why China might hate us a little bit. We ruined their civilization. Not we, you and me, but the West. And so I can see why they're cooking up fentanyl in labs, because wouldn't you, if your country was, you had like, they're forbidden. Oh wait, let me just read what it said. The Brit, they looted and ransacked the palace before leaving. Bido took a share of the spoils as well. This was what they said. A French interpreter was to describe the palace. You would need to dissolve all known precious stones in liquid gold and paint a picture with a diamond feather whose bristles contain all of the fantasies And so basically what he's saying is how beautiful the Forbidden Palace was, and how it was like out of a fairy tale, a storybook. It was heaven, and it became nothing, became rubbles. Magic grounds described in fairy tales, but when they left, only a dreary waste of ruins, and not one thing exists from the palace of palaces. I mean, guys, think of the Sun King, King Louis, you know, Versailles, even the Russian things that Empress Lizabeth built. These things are amazing. You visualize, they're the opulent, most opulent things in the world. Some things in Britain too, as well. Germany, before we bombed the shit out of them in all the wars. But China was the palace of palaces, guys. Can you imagine what that looked like? I can't, but you can anyway, because they ransacked it. Opium traders' business continued to boom after 1860. 65, they shipped over tens of millions of kilograms, tons of product to China. And the legalization, though, changed the business. Now non-Europeans were able to take over more and more of the trade. Also, China started producing some domestically because it's legal. So why would you have another country do it? So it just, we essentially, it's like if you made America addicted to heroin, you start fighting wars because you want to sell that heroin to Americans. And then finally, we're so drugged up, we're so weak, they say, they beat us down. They take DC, they take New York City, and they say, now opium's legal or heroin's legal. Here you go. You know, just to continue making money. Okay. So let's see here. Opium and let me see how many pages I got left. All right. We'll do finish this. So opium and Christianity. So Christian missionaries were some of the first Europeans to see inland China. The first group was Portuguese in the 16th century with religious fervor that driven them halfway across the world. Usually tolerated the Christian missionaries until the early 18th century when the King Emperor declared Christianity illegal, deporting any missionaries he could find. But in the early 19th century, a new wave of Protestant missionaries started taking hold. And some saw the opium as a part of God's divine plan to bring Christianity to China. I can see how you could see that. And then some other missionaries were disgusted by opium, probably more a little intellectually honest people. One guy sought help from the United States because he was wanted to preach the word. He wanted to proselytize, but he couldn't do it on an opium ship. He was too morally conflicting. And he asked the United States, could you please fund my travels? And his name was Medhurst, and he saw the damage firsthand. And have you guys seen like the photos of, look up Kensington in Philadelphia videos. I mean, that zombies walking around, that was literally what China was, guys. It was just, and if you guys don't know what like tons of people on heroin look like, you should look it up because it's literally zombies, Walking Dead more than World War Z. But I like that joke. You guys get it. Cause World War Z, they have like the fast zombies. And then what's the other Walking Dead? They're more like, you know, just walking with one arm and stuff. You could like run away from them, but that's literally what China was. And so I think it's hard for people to picture that. Like, okay, there was a lot of opium addicts, San Francisco, that was China. And I know I already said that, but it's just so important to get this across that people in Britain, they kind of knew this and they accepted it because it was God given right to free trade. So Medhurst, he tries to tell the British people the damage their country was inflicting on China. And he and others found, like him, found opium the biggest hurdle to converting China to Christianity. It also looped, remember how we were just talking about all Euro, the evil white man, the Europeans? Well, it was also made all the white people the exact same. There was no difference between an opium smuggler and a missionary to the Chinese. They came up with the term Jesus opium. And it was referred to the concoctions many of the missionaries fed to the people with addictions as cures. I walk, hey, Boondocking Billy, I don't think I've seen you before. So thank you, sir, for coming in. And you said, oh, there is my dog. You said, I walked Kensington when I was a kid. Now it's freaky stuff. Dude, wow, you're from Kensington? Are you lived around there growing up? It's, I mean, I was there, I've been clean like 5 years. So I was there, 5 years ago and it was bad then. And I have only seen, it's only gotten worse with all the woke, you know, don't put criminals in jail. If they're just stealing, let them alone. They're not hurting anybody. They're a $1 billion corporation they're stealing from. All true, but no, you need to get these people off the street because they're going to just never get better. Bucks County. Got it. I'm in Montgomery County, Boondocking Billy. So are you still in Bucks County, dude? That's hilarious. Small world. Yeah. Cops just watch, dude. I'm friends with this undercover drug cop. He went to my gym. So we would reminisce about Kensington. And I asked him like 2 years ago, I said, just for my, is it getting worse? And he said, it's like San Francisco. Okay. All right. So Dave, if you're still in the chat, this is what the chapter made me think. This is our last chapter here. But so Dave and I last show, he was in the chat talking about how, because I said, I don't know when people knew about the dangers of opium, like when they accepted that, when they realized you get addicted and you will get sick, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, they probably always knew. And I like kind of disagreed with that. I don't know. But so let's get into it. So in 1831, there was a parliamentary investigation and Pottinger, the guy that took over for Charles Eliot, he was unable to discover a single case. He couldn't find one of the misery caused by Britain importing opium into China. Has there been any damage? There has not been a single case of misery. What about that group over there that's just falling asleep, standing up? They're that relaxed. You think that looks like misery? I'm just playing jokes here. From the 1830s on, Britain's imports of opium began to rise. This dude once told me I should do meth because it's not addictive. Was he working for the opium smugglers in Britain North? That's what we need to ask him. Do you work for the Jameson Matheson Company, the opium smugglers? Hey, what's up, Bishop Gary Taters? Dude, I've never seen you in my chat before, but amazing name, first of all. Hilarious. Wow. You got to follow me. I want to follow you on Twitter for that name alone. Hilarious, North. Hilarious. So anyway, so in 1830s, Britain starts importing opium into their country because you got to make more money, right? You can't just keep sending it to China. So back then, more working class people were all turning to opium. I was really, for any sickness, babies were doped because the mom had to work because there was, you know, just like today, it was horrible conditions. And so you couldn't have a crying baby and sew in the factory or whatever. So they would dope their baby up so they would sleep while they worked. And you, as a child, you could work as many hours as age you were. So if you were 10 years old, you work 10 hours a day. If you were 9, you work 9 hours a day. You know, because a 10-year-old, that's what they should be doing, working 10 hours a day in a factory canning. But then in 1857, a member of parliament OD'd on laudanum. And we talked about that last episode. That was like one of the opium concoctions of pills that Britain chemist, maybe a German chemist or a Britain chemist made. And among this and the worry of infanticide, opium public perception was beginning to shift. So in the 1850s and 60s, laws were created to regulate the exploding British pharmaceutical industries. 1857 Act demanded opium be put under lock and key. Every sale, which I don't know how they did this, would have to be recorded and witnessed by a third party that knew both the seller and the buyer of opium. But by 1868, another Pharmacy Act was passed, removing any mention of opium at all. Didn't bring it up, just ignored it. I wonder who wrote the law. Probably people that are getting paid by opium. Oh, God. But data was finally being collected about opium, and research was discovering the physiological reactions to opium-based products. You know, like, oh, wow, if you take it for 2 months and you stop, oh, my God, you get sick? You feel like you're dying? Can't be from the opium. But the Society for the Suppression of the Opium Trade, the SSOT, in 1874 was created with Lord Shaftesbury as the president. Isn't that fascinating, too, guys? 1874. I mean, World War I really changed so much stuff. I love World War I. I did a show on it a while back, long time ago. If you want to learn more about World War I, how Britain was, it was all Britain's fault, pretty much. Check it out. But yeah, so 1874, this community was created, and the president of it was this Lord Shaftesbury. And while he was the face, though, the Quakers were behind the moral force. They were also the force behind the abolition of slavery. So kind of woke Christians of the day, you know, LGBTQ friendly Christians of yesterday. And I'm joking, because obviously slavery is not equatable to having rainbow flags outside your church, right? I'm making a joke here. But some Quakers would eventually become in Parliament, and the Quakers were like the Mormons of Britain. Honestly, that's like a quote that I should put on a t-shirt. The Quakers were the Mormons of Britain. Very wealthy, closed community, kind of viewed as odd, you know, doing some things that aren't really socially normal, acceptable, you know, like the quaking or the Mormons having all the wives, you understand. But Edward Pease, the Quaker, he's the guy that got into Parliament. They had to remove the rule because you had to have a swear-in ceremony. And the Quakers, they would not swear on anything. That was their rules. So Lord Shaftesbury, the president, suppression, opium people, he would die, and Pease would spearhead the debates 5 times in the 16 years between 1875 to 1891. But do you think the Quakers' debates and all these things mattered? Do you think that helped, you know, demonize opium anymore? Do you think it helped British government say, you know what, maybe it's kind of mean that we're doing this. Maybe it's immoral a little bit that we're called dealing death and destruction. No. You know, morality is good, but it never outweighs millions in your bank account for most people. And not only that, many of the anti-opium, this was fascinating. This is a great part to kind of end the show on. So this anti-opium groups, right? You had some powerful, rich people being against opium. Morals, right? They're good, rich people. They're kind. They care about you and your family, the Chinese and their families. They don't want to see death and destruction everywhere. Is that why they did it? Is that why they're anti-opium? Oh, no, 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 no. It's because they had huge shares in the cotton and textile trade in Bombay. So if they shut down the opium trade, what's Britain going to fall back on? Cotton and textiles. So their stocks are going to go up. And what does this sound like to me today? Just everything, right? Like the propaganda that's put out, like, we need to stop this. And because you're not looking over here, you're like, yeah, I agree with that rich person. Yeah, but really it's because they've got another reason why they want to do this. Why did England have to be so cruel? Is because the only way to be on top? It's a good question, dude. And you know, we caused this damage and stuff, but it wasn't England, right? It was these powerful bankers, Rothschild, the Bank of England, their power players that were getting money from the opium trade. These are the evil people that can sleep on their pile of money instead of their morality that they're worried about at night. And we have the same issue today. And all countries have this. All people have this issue. But it's just, I mean, Britain was just so powerful for so long, kind of like America, except, you know, public perception was kind of more important in our time. Yeah, more like absolutely North, more like they. I love saying they. My dad will always be like, who's they? You know, and I never know what the answer. I've got a few ideas, but you can't really put your finger on it. So that was a lot of the anti-opium power people had stock in other commodities. So basically, the only people caring about the moral standpoint were the weak, regular working class folks. The war against global warming. I bet we could tie that to the opium trade so well. Like, this is great, Bad Joint. Such a good job. That was so good, dude. The global warming and the electric cars. So, climate change, bad. Boo, cow farts, gas, evil, going to kill us, white supremacy. Oh, let's go electric on everything. Don't look over here that we're having slave labor, looking like we're in like building the Egyptian pyramids over there in Sierra Leone or wherever they're building, Liberia, wherever they're getting the lithium from. I mean, have you guys seen those videos? It's literally looks like it's like an ancient construction process. There are just thousands of people just with shovels, hand tools, digging, kids waiting on the side, digging up lithium. But climate change is evil. Ooh, it's coming to get us. Ooh. And real quick about climate change. So they always say it's 5.5 degrees warmer than it was in like the colonial times. True. The colonial times were the coldest times on recorded history. 300 years before the colonial times, it was our temperature. So they do this as a lie. It went up point a half degree to what though? It went up from the coldest time frame on recorded history, the colonial time period, went up 0.5 degrees. So it's actually the same exact temperature pre-industrial revolution, pre-gunpowder, pre-everything. Isn't that fascinating? Some folks are really against nature, won't even go near the waters or forests because there's fresh air. Yeah. They is the humans enslaving you. I love it, Bishop Gary Taters. Love it. Let's ask Bishop Gary. What was his name? Gary Taters. Now your name's confusing me. Gary Later, Larry Gators. Oh, I'm dyslexic. I always do that kind of stuff. So anyway, all right. So eventually, though, the new prime minister attacked the opium trade, gained power. This guy, William Gladstone. This is our last thing. So it's hilarious. So William Gladstone, he gets voted because he's anti-opium. He cares about morality. He's a Bernie Sanders type fella, you know, like, oh, I want to help the little guy out. We're about these poor Chinese people. So they vote him in. He takes power. He says, I'm coming after opium. His base probably goes crazy. Yeah. Just like Donald Trump. Oh, we're going to lock her up. Yeah. Yeah. And so then he starts a commission, right? He says, let's study it. So the commission starts. He says, let's study what has to be done to slowly phase out the empire's dependence on opium revenues. Sounds good. Well, what do you think Gladstone then did? Well, then he changed, probably because he just got a big deposit in his bank account. Instead of what had to be done to remove British's reliance off of opium, he changed it from what had to be done to does it have to be done? Is it really bad? Maybe we got bad info. Let's look. Let's do a thing to find out. So the Anti-Opium Coalition was up in uproar. This was their guy that was going to take down the opium trade and boost cotton stocks. So he creates this, so he creates this commission. They stack the commission both ways. They have, it looks like an unbiased thing. Obviously it's biased. And I just wanted to go over, so they also kicked up all these witnesses in India, these random witnesses, these random Indians that see the, they either see the pain or the profit of the opium trade. Well, which ones do you think they picked? Do you think they picked honest, poor peasants? And so they would bring the priests and missionaries, they began speaking out louder, which carried weight, except the pro-opium faction was skilled at debating. They would bring up how the missionaries were all temperance movement people, the pro-opium people. And they'd say anything like, so, oh, you middle, you know, you working class person, do you like to drink alcohol? Well, that the same people that are anti-opium are anti-alcohol. So I guess we're going to take that next then. And that terrified the people. That terrified these people who alcohol was one of their main vices of relaxation. And now, you know, you can get behind, yeah, I don't do opium and we're hurting these poor Chinese. But then when people tell you, oh, well, then they're coming for your alcohol next, which they kind of were. What, are you going to get more people on your anti-opium, anti-alcohol side, or are you going to lose them? And you lose them. So basically they were wet blankets on the fence who knew opium was the only the start. One politician brought up, do we, since China, since opium sending is so bad, do we stop sending alcohol out of country as well? That causes issues. That causes death. Is it, so do we stop exporting that? And brilliant point, right? I mean, I don't know how you argue against, you'd say, well, it's different. And they'd say, well, no, it's not. It's a drug, same way. And their arguments sounded, their arguments, because you can, I mean, if you read the book, you can go, they go into like all the arguments. But it sounded like something like that I would say as a heroin addict, like when I was using them and my parents or family would say, you got to stop shooting heroin. You're, look at all this, look at you. And I'd say, well, you drink alcohol every day. You're addicted to caffeine. And, you know, granted, the response would be, have you robbed your grandmother because of your caffeine addiction? No. So not the same, but that's the same arguments these people were making. Alcohol, opiate, and opiates trigger the same receptors. Yeah, definitely they were. Definitely they do. Oh, I missed all these comments. Some snakes, snakes and aliens. They picked the most honest, of course, the noble people they were. Hilarious, North. Yes, exactly. And allegedly opiates and alcohol trigger the same receptors. They do. There's like some, you know. So at that point, it's not unfair to say that, you know, but were you shipping alcohol where it's illegal by the kilo, by the ton, and or were you not? You know, I only have not robbed my grandma because caffeine is cheap. And that's a fair point too. I used that argument very many times during my addiction. I said, alcohol is legal and you have alcoholics, but they can function because it's legal and it's not astronomically priced because it's legal. And so you can go into a store and buy alcohol. That's why they don't get arrested except for DUIs and stupid stuff like that. So yeah. But anyway, they brought up how the Sikhs, this was another argument they used. They brought up how the Sikhs had used opium forever. And the Sikhs were the British favorite Indian people. They loved the Sikhs. They were respectable, I guess, probably most, similar to the British populace's mind. I don't know what you call it. So they said to the Sikhs, like, does opium cause, or like, you know, the hand-selected Sikhs, does opium cause issue? And they say, well, you guys think we're the most respectable group in India. I'm respectable. I've used opium my whole life. You see? So it's just, perception. Perception is everything. And they are the finest Indian soldiers. If opium's so bad, how come they're so great? Good point, dude, right? If the opium's so bad, how come the Sikhs are the best group? The warriors of India, dude, they're so badass, the Sikhs. Oh my gosh. They came with their swords in World War II. And I'm sure you, North, maybe you know more, but the Sikhs in England they fight the Muslims because of these grooming, kidnapping rings that these jihadists, these Muslim extremists do. They rape 13-year-old girl with 30 men because they get her addicted to drugs, blah, blah, blah. A lot of times Sikh girls and the Sikh family or the Sikh leaders, they would go and they would murder these Muslim gangs, because the police wouldn't do anything because it would be racist. So the Sikhs are badass, dude. Awesome. If you guys know any Sikhs, they're the ones that have the turban. The Indian people with the turbans, and they are amazing. What a rich culture. I go to an Indian restaurant, they're Sikh, and I always tell them what I learned about the Sikhs. Yep. Yeah. They fought the Muslims when Hindus had lost the power to do it. I did not know that, North. And that is fascinating because they are freaking badass. So yeah, if you guys see the turbans, they're Sikhs. You dap them up, dude. Those are real ones, right? But they brought more and more Indians to the commission. They would all say how ridiculous is that they're attacking opium. It's just an article of commerce. It's just like cotton. It's just a commodity. And anti-opium Indians would be attacked. But they brought the ones that said, get rid of opium. They say, what's your social status? And then they would do this to like throw dirt on them. And then they would send police and lawyers to find out what points they were going to bring up in their trial, AKA intimidating them. It's kind of like late stage religion to help the Indians, had their own religious founder like other religions. Yeah, North. I briefly read that. I think like 1500s he created his religion. It's very cool. It's very cool. It's not new age. It's very lax, if I'm right, North. It's not like it's not really super like this is what you do. It's a lot of like Jesus teachings. Seems these drugs can shift the probabilities of your actions in high quantities, pushing ether parasites in your conscious. Etheric. Ooh, I don't know that word, but I agree, dude. Yeah. That's why do you think they push drugs in America so much? Why does all rap music promote drugs, sipping syrup or pot? I mean, pot, I remember Wiz Khalifa was one of the first artists, and Redman and Method Man, but that Wiz was like the first one. It was, he built his brand on smoking weed in like 2009, 2010. Look where we are now. Weed is smoked by everybody. You know, not that that's bad. I mean, I've smoked pot before, and I'm not anti-pot, but you get enough of a populace on drugs, it's just easier to control. So that's it for tonight's show. I think that we're going to end this because I want to do the opium wars. I've never learned about the opium wars, so I hope you guys learned something. North, thank you, Bad Goy, hilarious name. Boondock and Billy, everybody, Dave, Bishop, Gary Taters, thanks for coming, guys. I'm Jack Allen. Thanks for listening. I'm going to try and do a show either tomorrow with somebody, or I'll do one. I'll do start picking it up now. Now that my dog's behaving better, I can do more shows again. So I miss seeing you guys. So thanks to all 10 of you that were watching here tonight. God bless. Much love. I'm Jack Allen with Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Take care, everybody. Peace.